Welcome to Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday, and you'll notice a change in our theme music this afternoon. Today, while the Cuban people observe 9 days of mourning after the death of longtime leader Fidel Castro, we're listening to the Buena Vista Social Club, Chan Chan. Well, Donald Trump is filling out his cabinet, and he's nominated billionaire conservative Betsy DeVos for education secretary. We'll speak with an advocate for public education about that selection and about education issues in Florida. We want to take your phone calls. I'd especially like to hear from you if you're concerned about education. And if you haven't called in before, the number here is 813-239-9663. You can also email your question or comment to dj@wmnf.org. You can text us at 813-433-0885. The number again, 813-239-9663. I want to welcome my guest to the studio today, Susan Smith. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you. Susan, thanks for having me today, Sean.
Thanks so much for being back on Midpoint. She's a public education advocate and the president of the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida. You know, we do want to talk about education issues, but since we just heard on the NPR headlines, the latest news about the Ohio State University and the shootings there. This has to do with education, of course. Another shooting at another college campus. Your thoughts?
Well, two of the issues that we follow closely in the caucus are the gun issue, gun safety, and also public education. So I think it's, you know, the overlap today is especially important. I hope this renews opposition to the guns on campus bill that we're expecting to see again when the Florida legislature kicks off in March, because I can only imagine amidst the panic and confusion today at Ohio State, if people had been armed, if many of the students had been carrying weapons, because nobody knew what was going on. There were noises, there was confusion, and if people had just started randomly shooting at what they perceived to be danger, we'd probably have a much worse situation on our hands. And, you know, my heart does go out to the families of those who were injured today and possibly killed.
The latest we're hearing is that there may be 7 people injured and that the campus is clear now. They've been given the all clear. A lot of the House members in Florida had this legislation that you're talking about, where the allowing guns on campuses, it usually did better in the House and then stalled in the Senate. But because of term limits, sometimes now we're getting more of the House members moving up into the Senate. What's the likelihood that something like that has a better chance of passing in the next session because the Senate may be going a little bit further right?
Well, I think it was only halted last go around because Miguel Diaz de la Portilla was the chair of one of the committees that was able to stop it. And he knew he was going to have a tough election, which he did, and he was defeated. So I think it'll be as easy to stop this next go-around unless people really mobilize against it.
Well, let's turn to more traditional education issues. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start with Donald Trump's nominee for the Secretary of Education, and that's Betsy DeVos. What do we know about this billionaire heiress to the DeVos fortune that comes from Amway? What do we know about her?
Well, we have literally books of information on her, because she's been an enemy of public education for many years. So those of us who have been pushing back against school choice in quotation marks and education reform in Florida are very familiar with her and her efforts to privatize the public education system through vouchers and charters. She has a lot of Florida connections, not just through her husband's company, Amway, and then the Orlando Magic that they own. But she also sits on the board, or has been on the board, of Jeb Bush's, one of his foundations. And her family donates a lot of money to his foundations also. So the connection is strong.
And you can't really talk about education in Florida over the last couple of decades without talking about Jeb Bush. What did he do as governor that kind of set a lot of this in motion? Especially thinking about the FCAT, about high-stakes standardized testing, and about this buzzword called accountability. What's happened before Jeb Bush compared to now as far as public education in Florida?
Well, testing has become the kind of the be-all, end-all, and we think the purpose of it has been to divert funding towards these private for-profit companies, and also the religious piece of it, the religious schools, which is where Betsy DeVos's big interest has been. Just to let you know a little bit about her family, her husband, as I was saying, is heir to the Amway fortune, and her own family is the Prince family, and her father was an auto parts billionaire from Michigan, who was one of the founders of the Family Research Council. So we get the conservative, right, religious piece of it from her side of the family. So they really are a Michigan power company that has worked to put a lot of the policies in place in Michigan that we've seen in Florida since Jeb Bush. All of these come from Milton Friedman and the whole free market approach to public education. So I think we heard last week from our Speaker of the House, Richard Corcoran, that this is going to be the new education policy in Florida, will be a free market system. So we're all about capital markets determining what our schools are going to be, because it seems that that a lot of people in this country don't think education, public education, is a common good anymore. It's all about profits and who is going to be the best at the competitive model.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about Richard Corcoran. He's the new Florida House Speaker, and he said that Florida's main teachers union is perpetuating an evil lawsuit. I'll give you the exact words. He said the teachers union is fixated on halting innovation and competition in education. They're literally trying to destroy the lives of 100,000 children. Most of them are minorities and all of them are poor. It's downright evil. He's talking about the Florida Education Association's lawsuit that's challenging a voucher program that offers tax credits to businesses that pay for children to attend private schools. Is the Education Association destroying the lives of 100,000 minority children in Florida?
You know, I think it's laughable on its face. Florida is a right-to-work state. Our unions are not powerful in the state of Florida. The teachers' union especially is not powerful. It's almost like the last line of defense to protect our public school system. Even the PTA dropped out of this lawsuit, which I think was appalling, because the FEA is trying to fight for these children to be protected. The voucher system does nothing to protect the rights of these children. And this was Betsy DeVos's big plan, was the voucher program. We know that vouchers, when they're on the ballot, are defeated over and over again by the public, because the public does not want their tax dollars diverted to these unaccountable schools. 90%, I've heard that figure, I can't verify it, but 90% of the voucher schools in Florida are religious. So that means they found a way to divert tax dollars at the expense of your child's neighborhood public school. They have found a way to divert that money into the private coffers of private schools and religious schools. And I think it's unconstitutional. FEA thinks it's unconstitutional. NAACP thinks it's unconstitutional. And I think it's time for the voters of Florida once again to mobilize and let their government know that they don't agree with Richard Corcoran.
And the way that it happens is that corporations make what they call donations to this fund that funds these private scholarships, but dollar for dollar, they pay fewer taxes. If they donate $1 million, they'll have to pay $1 million less in taxes to the state. So it's not directly diverting funds from the public education, but it's kind of going in a roundabout way to do essentially the same thing. It's taking what would have been tax funds and putting them directly into the private scholarships, which don't help public education at all. Is public education so well funded in Florida that we don't need those tax dollars?
We have never been well funded in Florida. We have always been well below the national average, even in good economic times in Florida. I think we've averaged average $3,000 per student less than what the national average is. So we have never fully funded our education system the way the people wanted it funded per the Constitution, because they want a high quality public education for every child. That's in our Constitution. But the privatizers keep trying to figure out all these schemes to divert the money, and the tax scholarships are one of those schemes that they've created. And again, Betsy DeVos comes in on this because the Step Up Foundation, Step Up for Students, is the group that the tax dollars are funneled through. It's run by John Kirtley. John Kirtley from Tampa is a venture capitalist. He sits on the board of Betsy DeVos's foundations. She sits on the board of his foundations and Jeb Bush's foundations. It's an incestuous group of billionaires and plutocrats who are trying to take over the public schools in this country and end the public schools, as I said, because they think capitalism is the best way.
In Jane Mayer's book, Dark Money, she talks about Betsy DeVos and how Betsy DeVos is kind of open about trying to make change with her fortune. And Dark Money is a very good book about how money in politics is just getting really out of control, in case, you know, the latest election you didn't need any more evidence. But in Dark Money, Jane Mayer writes about Betsy DeVos. She says, soft money was just hard-earned American dollars that Big Brother has yet to find a way to control. That's all it is, nothing more, DeVos added. I know a little something about soft money, as my family is the largest single contributor of soft money to the National Republican Party. She said, I have decided, however, to stop taking offense at the suggestion that we're buying influence. Now I simply concede the point. They're right. We do expect some things in return. We expect to foster a conservative governing philosophy consisting of limited government and respect for traditional American virtues. We expect a return on our investment. We expect a good and honest government. Furthermore, we expect the Republican Party to use the money to promote these policies, and yes, to win elections. People like us, she concluded archly, must surely be stopped. So that's from Jane Mayer's book, Dark Money. That's Betsy DeVos speaking in that quote. So this is a billionaire who's saying, essentially, look, I have money, and I'm going to use that money to influence elections so that things will get more conservative, at least by her definition, in education and all these other things. We could also talk about LGBT rights and LGBT issues when it comes to Betsy DeVos.
Yes, they funded a lot of the RFRA, the religious freedom bills. We saw one in Florida last session to give people the freedom not to follow the law just by making claims that it's their religion that keeps them from doing it. So there's also an anti-gay agenda that Betsy DeVos has. I think what this can do is unite allies, because we can bring, you know, a lot of the public education people have not been advocating as much for LGBT issues as maybe they would have in the past. LGBT people, not so much on education issues. I think this is a place that we can form alliances to oppose this nomination because of the damage that this family has done. I also wanted to talk a little bit about this money. I just read this morning on Diane Ravitch's blog, dianeravitch.net, if you're not subscribing, you should, about an article, an opinion piece that came out in the Detroit paper last September, I believe, when they got the results of some of the campaign finance reports from the Michigan elections in the primary. And the DeVos family spent $1.45 million on state legislative races in order to get, there was a provision in this bill that had been introduced about holding charter schools to the same accountability standards as regular public schools, and they dropped that requirement after all these Republican legislators got donations from the DeVos family. It's blatant what they're doing.
But accountability was how this all started. That's how all these things got pressed in the first place, is that we have to have accountability. Those third graders, we have to know whether they're getting educated. And so there has to be high stakes tests because of accountability. And now you're saying that they're dropping that requirement.
There's no accountability with these private groups. it's just not there. And we're seeing in Florida, again, we saw the bill last session. It was dropped. It was a joint resolution. So they want to put in the Constitution, and because it's a non-presidential year, next cycle, we think this legislation will be back to put an amendment on the ballot in 2018 to set up a charter authorizing organization in Tallahassee so that local school boards no longer have the authority to monitor and approve and hold charter schools accountable. They want to take the power away from the local people that you elected and put it in the hands of political appointees in Tallahassee. This, it's like Frank Luntz's language where they take the word and they totally abuse the word and have it mean something that's the exact opposite. And that's what Jeb Bush's policies have done. And I say Jeb Bush because you can go back to a floor debate 2 years ago and you can hear Tom Lee and I forget, Alan Hayes maybe, have a debate about one of the bills and say they are sick of the foundation calling them at midnight telling them what to do, because Patricia Levesque and Jeb's Florida C3, the Foundation for Excellence in Education, write education policy for the state of Florida. And then his C4, the Foundation for Florida's Future, spreads this garbage around the country. So we are like the incubator for a lot of these bad policies. But Betsy DeVos's hand is in it just like Jeb Bush's.
We're speaking with Susan Smith. She's a public education advocate, and she's also the president of the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida. It's 12:22 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday, and you can call in with your thoughts, 813-239-9663. And you can also text us, and we'll get to the text in just a second as well, 813-433-0885, or email us at dj@wmnf.org. We'll go back to the anti-LGBT causes of Betsy DeVos and her groups. Civil rights groups, this is from Politico, say they're deeply concerned that the extension of civil rights protections to gay and transgender students by President Barack Obama's education department will be dismantled by Betsy DeVos. She has donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to groups that push conversion therapy. That's, if you don't know what that is, that's when they try to take LGBT people and make them straight, I guess. The Office for Civil Rights in Obama's Education Department has urged schools to extend anti-bullying policies to cover LGBT students, allow LGBT student groups on campuses, and protect the right of transgender students to use bathrooms and locker rooms of their choice. But all these protections might go on the wayside if Betsy DeVos runs the Department of Education.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Education policy is controlled at the state level, but what the federal government does is it funds programs like Title I. So there's a lot of money coming down from the federal government. So what can happen is the federal government can put strings on this money. And yesterday in the Washington Post, Valerie Strauss wrote, she had republished two scenarios that someone else had written about. And one of the scenarios, and Donald Trump promised this in his election, was that he would block grant federal money to the states. So if you block grant this money without any kind of restrictions on it, which Betsy DeVos could do, and we know they've got a willing partner in the Florida legislature. We know we've seen these bills. We've seen the conversion bills in the legislature. We've seen the anti-conversion bills also that never even get a hearing. But we know that now we've got a president who just kind of casts off education. He sent his kids to, very elite private schools, so I'm sure it's just kind of on the back burner for him. He appointed a plutocrat religious wingnut to this position. We're hoping that that gets opposed. And then you've got the Florida legislature that's going to jump on board 100%. So children will lose these protections. They'll lose their right to a reading program if we get these block grants, because who knows if the Florida legislature will use the money to fund public school reading programs in our highly impoverished schools, because that's what Title I schools are. So, you know, what you've got here is a perfect storm to destroy our system, our public education system, which we think is kind of the bedrock of our democracy.
So you've got right now, I mean, the states run the education, but there are rules and requirements and backed up by funds from the federal government. And what you're saying is, if they block grants, if the states just get a bunch of money and they don't have any requirements to do anything, education could look really differently in a place like Florida compared to, say, Connecticut or Massachusetts or someplace where maybe I'm going out a little bit on a limb here, but maybe the legislators in those states care a little bit more about public education than they do here in Florida.
Well, many of them benefit from the privatization schemes here in Florida, too. We can talk about that on another show, but it's true. And, you know, people have to pay attention. People have to call Marco Rubio and Bill Nelson and tell them not to approve this this nomination, and while they're at it, not to approve Jeff Sessions, because that's another piece of these civil rights protections, is the Attorney General. So we're in danger in this country of losing a lot of what makes us special. And I don't know that the voters were aware of everything they put at risk on November 8th.
Yeah, I don't think that there was much talk about Betsy DeVos being education secretary when people were talking about, electing Donald Trump as president. So what does that look like? Have you heard anything? I don't remember reading anything from Bill Nelson about whether there might be a filibuster of this nomination or whether there's a big block of senators, a large enough block that would oppose her nomination. Have you heard?
Well, at this point, Mitch McConnell could not use the filibuster because he doesn't have to. I think they could end the filibuster. Right now, I think it only applies, didn't the Democrats do that last time they were in? It only applies to Supreme Court justices now or something.
Might not be an option.
It might not even be an option. I would hope there are enough Republicans, sane Republicans in the Senate, but unless they hear from voters and get worried about it, and, you know, this is a place maybe the Tea Party would unite. You know, there are places we work with the Tea Party in education policy. The testing and Common Core are two of the issues that we've worked together on. So, you know, sometimes these policies create strange bedfellows. So it's always possible.
Right. So when this was first announced on Wednesday, that was the first thing we heard about opposition to Betsy DeVos, is we heard that, whoa, conservatives are upset because she once backed Common Core, and many conservatives oppose Common Core, which actually kind of sounds a lot like what Jeb Bush's education policies were in Florida for the last 15, 20 years. So the conservatives are upset that she once supported Common Core, but now she says she backs off that a little bit. What's her position? What is Common Core, I guess? What's her position now on that?
Well, Common Core are the standards that were written not by educators. They were written by academics and people who stood to benefit financially by the sets of standards that were, like I said, created without teacher input. It's more of the accountability model that we think is bogus, because the standards are not, don't take child development in the lower grades into account, or they didn't when they were written. So, the standards, we are not opposed to standards. We had good standards before Common Core. This is all about making money. It's about writing a set of standards, selling curriculum to match the standards, selling test prep to match the testing that's going to be on the standards, and then selling the tests themselves, and then selling the teacher training now in education. Teachers have to pass a Pearson-owned test to get certified in Florida. This is pervasive. Pearson is another group that that sits on these boards and donates to all these causes. It's all about making money on the backs of children and at the taxpayers, against what the taxpayers want in Florida, as we've seen. It's like the class size amendment. How many times are they going to try to undo it or get around it? They've tried multiple times because it doesn't fit with their model. They assume children are little widgets that they can just fit in a mold and, you know, put it into this machine, this school factory, and spit it out on the other end. And that's not what children are. Each child needs to be developed according to his or her own potential. It's not about tests. It's not about college and career ready. It's about developing your potential in the world. That's what it should be about. And that's what we believe as a caucus that public education is. And as the farther we get away from that, the further we get away from it, the less success we're going to see in our children.
Well, let's go to our listeners. We have a text here. Let me first say that my guest is Susan Smith. She's president of the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida. And my name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. It's 12:31 in the afternoon. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. And you can call in at 813-239-9663. Email us at dj@wmnf.org or text at 813-433-0885. Here's a text from the 813 area code. The person does not give a name, but he or she is asking, why don't the Democrats complain about the Florida VPK program, voluntary pre-kindergarten? That's a direct voucher program, mostly private schools, and also most of the private, and the message cuts off there. So that's a good question that says, voluntary pre-K, is that a voucher program and do you oppose it?
It is. It's interesting because one Sunday, a couple of weeks before the election, or maybe just a week before the election, there was a debate on Sunday morning between Lynn Gray and Kathy James, who were running for school board, and I think the VPK program came up, and they were discussing on Facebook, I started a Facebook discussion and, you know, school board members jumped into it about how the VPK kids were the most prepared because they were coming in knowing their shapes and their letters and their numbers. They were coming to kindergarten with all this. And those of us with a background in child development, which is what my background is, were pretty appalled by that because that is not developmentally appropriate for all children. So I worry that the VPK program is doing harm. I'm sure there are tremendous benefits to it, but unless you maintain strict developmentally appropriate standards for children, and when I taught preschool, I haven't taught for 16 years now, but we were play-based. We were not, you know, worksheets and letters and numbers based. Kids learned those things when they were in kindergarten and first grade. Now they're expected to come to kindergarten knowing those things. And, you know, nobody told these little children's brains that the standards were all getting changed on them. So I worry a lot. This is one of the things that concerns me about universal pre-K. We have to have educators and parents involved when we have standards and when we have curriculum developed to make sure that it meets where children are. Otherwise, we're going to turn them off school and they're going to drop out. We're going to have high attrition rates. There are all kinds of problems associated with pushing children before they're ready.
So what I think I'm hearing you say is if it's developmentally appropriate education or interaction, I guess, with adults, that you are in favor of a pre-kindergarten program.
I think I would support all these with our tax dollars outright as long as you're meeting standards.
So it would be best to have maybe a public option.
Absolutely public school. That's in our platform of the Progressive Caucus. So Democrats are fighting for these things. It's just that we've got so many things we've had to fight for over the last few years, especially in the state of Florida. I think I saw this weekend somebody wrote a blog post about the lack of acknowledgement that we are now 20 years under total Republican control in the state of Florida with our government. And, you know, and people turn around and elect a 21-year-old in Pasco County because they want change when their entire lives are controlled by Republicans. So I don't know why they feel this need to change something they control. Anyway, that's a different topic, but you can tell I get wound up about this. But Democrats are talking about these issues, and we have been, and we follow the legislation, and we have a network of public education supporters that feel the way we do. Like I said, a lot of it's bipartisan. Part of the opt-out movement is removing, you know, the testing and this phony accountability so that parents do control. You know, they can say, no, my child's not doing that because it's not appropriate. So, you know, that's the only thing that I have seen scare the legislature is all these parents that are just saying no to the testing. So I'm sorry I got off topic there because I get fired up about these things. But I would favor, child care for parents when children are born that's supported with our tax dollars, because I think that allows, we see it in other countries, like the Scandinavian countries, where parents get much more support. They're able to go to their job and not be concerned about child care issues. Half of their salary doesn't go to child care. So there are many options that we could look at that are not private options that we would like to see.
Going back to Betsy DeVos again, and to how she's advocating for these Christian values, at least some Christian conservative, some values that are considered Christian conservative. She is part of an effort that funded ads against Dan Gelber a few years ago when he was running for attorney general. And I have a picture of the ad that I'll try to describe. It's a wanted poster like you'd see out in the Old West. And there's two pictures of Dan Gelber's face. And it says, wanted attorney general candidate Dan Gelber. And this is what this ad says: for crimes against Jewish education, voting no on funding for Jewish schools. So Betsy DeVos helped to fund this type of attack ad, we can call it, against Dan Gelber, who is Jewish, right? And that he's like voting no on funding for Jewish schools. What's that mean?
It means that vouchers can be used in religious schools. We've seen the Catholic Church take voucher money, and I know I've got friends who are progressive Catholics who have tried to talk to the leaders of the diocese in our area about kind of making a deal with the devil, for lack of a better term. You take this voucher money, and then, you know, if you take taxpayer dollars, you need to be accountable to the taxpayers. So what if the taxpayers come in and tell you how to teach your religion? I don't think that's right. I have no problem with Jewish education. I taught in a Jewish preschool. I taught in a Catholic elementary school. I've taught in public schools. I have no problem with private schools or with religious schools. It's just that is not for the public good. Those are private options for parents to pay for if they want them, but they should not be subsidized by the taxpayer.
So he wasn't specifically taking money away from Jewish schools. He was just opposing the voucher program.
He was opposing the voucher program. By the way, Joe Negron, who is the new Senate leader, introduced the voucher bill when he was in the House back in the early 2000s.
Which makes it seem like it's pretty safe when he's in the Senate.
He's the Senate leader. Corcoran, we know how he feels. He made that clear the other day. So we've got a fight on our hands. So people better mobilize. You better memorize the phone numbers into those offices and be prepared to call and let your thoughts be known on these efforts to privatize.
And those phone numbers you're talking about were for the Florida leaders, but I do have a question from email from Suzanne, who's asking, how can I contact Bill and Marco, meaning Senators Nelson and Rubio of Florida? And also, please spell Betty's last name. Betty DeVos, capital D, lowercase e, capital V, as in Victor, O-S, DeVos. She's part of the DeVos family. Her father-in-law owns the Orlando Magic and founded Amway, the pyramid marketing schemes, I guess. And her brother is Eric Prince, who founded Blackwater, the mercenary military wing, corporate military wing, privatized corporate armed guards, I guess, in Iraq and so forth. And her husband is also an heir to the DeVos fortune from...
He runs the company now. Anyway. It's Betsy DeVos, not Betty. But we did put on our website this morning, if you go to Progressive Dem Caucus FL, there is a link at the bottom to the Network for Public Education's letter writing tool that you can go in and put your zip code and it will help you write. I mean, not help you. It's a form that you can write your own letter to Bill Nelson and Marco Rubio to let them know that you oppose this nomination. If you can't get to our website, you can Google Bill Nelson contact or Marco Rubio contact, and you will get their office numbers in D.C. or in Florida. They have several offices throughout Florida, and you can call into their offices today and tell them to vote no. This letter writing tool that I was telling you about, they put it up, I think, on Friday or Saturday, and they've already gotten over 70,000 responses. So this is something people are worried about. So please help us fight back against this nomination.
That's Susan Smith. She's president of the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida. We're talking about Betsy DeVos, who is the Trump administration's pick for education secretary. And we're talking about education issues in Florida as well. If you'd like to call in, 813-239-9663. This is Midpoint on WMNF Tampa. It's 12:41 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host every Monday. And I should also say that... where was I going to go with that? Well, let's go to the phone lines. We have Danny in Tampa. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Sean. Good afternoon, and good afternoon, Susan.
Hi.
Yes. Susan, I'm so happy that you were on today divulging all this about Betsy DeVos. I heard some things about that, and you're clearing it up. Eric Prince, I've heard of him. That's her brother?
That's her brother.
Unbelievable, from Blackwater. And I want to ask you, Donald Trump, I goes to show you that Donald Trump is not that liberal, like people say, and I knew he wasn't. I want to ask you, he was considering Michelle Rhee. You know who she is, right?
I do.
Right, the infamous Michelle Rhee. He was considering her for this position, wasn't he?
He was.
And I think she applied for this. Would that have been worse or better than Betsy DeVos, or just as bad? Because I know that she was fired from the D.C. system a few years ago for the controversial tactics that she put in there when she took over the schools, and they said that she made them better, but then later on there was a controversy about cheating and then her firing people on the spot, firing people around the spot, been there for years. So I was wondering about that. I'll hang up and listen then.
All right, thanks for the call, Danny.
You know, I'm not sure she would have been quite as bad. Another name I read this morning, which was disturbing, equally as disturbing, was Jerry Falwell Jr. I think he said he had been offered the position. So, you know, all of them are bad. It would be nice to have a real supporter of public schools and an educator in that position, and we haven't really had that for a long time. We didn't have it during Obama's administration either. We have not been happy with his policies. His Race to the Top was a terrible program, and the new authorization, you know, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act that is being put into place now, we'll see how that goes. And then it's three more years before that has to be authorized, so we'll see how it goes under Betsy DeVos's leadership. But that was passed, and that's in place now for 3 years, so we'll see. Hopefully that will give us some little degree of protection, but I'm afraid that there's not a whole lot of there's not a whole lot of making America great in these choices that Donald Trump is making.
All right, well, thanks for that call, Danny. If you'd like to call in, it's 813-239-9663. We'll go back to the phones in just a second. I want to shift gears just a little bit since we're talking about, since you're the head, Susan, of the president of the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida. I happen to know you, you are a strong Hillary Clinton supporter, and in the primary you supported Bernie Sanders. What do you think now about the efforts of the Green Party's candidate to try to do these recounts in the three states? There, it looks like they're going to move ahead, that there will be recounts, possibly manual recounts where there are manual ballots to be counted. I think that they're going to look at the software that was in the ballot, in the machines. Your thoughts on the recount?
Well, I think the recount's a good thing, or an audit would be even better, I think. I'm not usually into conspiracy stuff on voting, although I think we've got enough evidence that it's been a problem in the past. But I did see somebody put some vote totals up for a county in Wisconsin, and the totals were like 3,000 votes off from, like, the totals in the presidential vote were 3,000 more than what the total vote showed up for that county. I also heard that they only had 600 and some, under 700 provisional ballots in Wisconsin. I think we had that many in Florida, and just in Hillsborough County. So, you know, the provisional ballot thing is concerning also. And I know I was at the polls on Election Day, and I'm not sure we did a good enough job this time around pushing people to, you know, to follow up on these with a provisional ballot. A little concerned about our election protection this time, what the Democratic Party did, because I know I saw some cases where we sent people back in to talk to the clerks, and they were allowed to vote. But you have to know what to say, because not all election workers are well trained. I know we have an exceptional supervisor, I think, in Craig Latimer, but I think that sometimes in the rush of Election Day, you get people that go in and they may be registered in another county, and the laws in Florida allow them to change their address, I think, on Election Day. So there are a lot of things, you know, the voters do need assistance. We've seen that. And I'm not sure every state, if you've got a hostile administration, I'm not sure every state gets that kind of protection. So I'm glad Jill Stein is doing this. It just makes her a little, you know, maybe redeem herself in the eyes of people who thought she was a spoiler.
And the Clinton campaign is joining the effort in the first state. Was it Wisconsin? I think it was. And it sounds like the campaign might also join in the other two states when they get rolling as well. So it would be interesting to find out if there are any discrepancies like that and to look
at
about.
Yeah, you know, I'm really happy about it too, because many of us have never quite forgiven Al Gore for giving up and not pushing for a full 67 county recount in 2000, because it would have shown that he won that election. And, you know, a lot of innocent people died because of the policies of George Bush, and I'm not sure that would have happened under an Al Gore. So, you know, I think we need to do everything we can to guarantee that everybody's vote counts and that everybody gets to cast a ballot that's eligible.
And about the 2000 election, you don't just say that off the top of your head. That's the newspapers went back in, they looked at the ballots that weren't tallied in all the counties in Florida, and you know, but by some counting, accounting, it looked like Al Gore had won Florida. They just didn't finish counting the ballots, essentially.
Right. Well, I think Gore's team only asked for recounts in certain counties and not the whole state. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to have good attorneys on your side.
Yeah, well, at the time it was because strategically they thought that would give them the best advantage, which, you know, maybe democracy is more important.
Is more important, yes.
All right, so 813-239-9663 is the number to call. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. My guest is Susan Smith, the president of the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida. And let's go to the phones. We have Joe in Clearwater. Hi, Joe.
Hi,
Joe.
I'm a long-time member of a Democratic Socialist of America, and I was appalled that in Pinellas County, I'm in Pinellas, and Janet Long, one of our commissioners, backed Chris Lagbala, a Republican, for Senate. Now, this gentleman won't even give Medicaid to the poor. And this Democrat who attends Democratic functions here in Pinellas County was backing him. He even had it in his leaflets that Janet Long, Democrat Janet Long, was backing him. This is what's wrong with the Democratic Party. I'm sick and tired of Democrats sliding off to the right and backing these Republicans or doing Republican issues. Donald Trump spoke like a Democrat. That's why he's in office. And I'm sick and tired of the Democrats in Pinellas County and throughout the state. They need to get their act together because this state's going to be Republican to the end of time if they don't straighten their act up.
All right. Thank you, Joe.
You know, I can't disagree with that at all. And I didn't know about Janet Long's support of Chris Lagbala, but I know that other Democrats have supported him. And I just can't go along with that because we know what the agenda is. We know they vote with leadership when they go to Tallahassee. And I just, it's one of the reasons we started our caucus. So I hope more people will join us. You can go to our website, Progressive Dem Caucus FL. .org and join our caucus today. We've had a big surge in membership over the past year. The candidacy of Bernie Sanders really helped us. We've kicked off four chapters in the state over the last little over a year, and two more in formation, and interest meetings being held in other counties. So there is a real hunger for progressive policies and for a Democratic Party that will fight for working people.
Thank you for that call, Joe. We'll try Jarrell in Tampa now. Hi, Jarrell.
Yeah, good afternoon. How y'all doing?
Hi, good. Doing well.
Listen, you know, I've got to be honest with you here, and this may be unpopular opinion, but, you know, we in Cuba. We allowed to have dissent up in here. But listen, the most important thing, most important color in most things, usually green. And it ain't green because the Green Party and peace and love and environment. It's green because of that dollar bill. And that's all Jill Stein trying to do. She feeding the pockets. And I know what she getting at. And, you know, I almost voted for her. I should have voted for Harambe because I ain't like none of these candidates. And it just made me sick. And she praising Castro. My goodness. That's all I got to say. And y'all have a blessed day.
All right. Thanks for that comment, Jarrell. So I do want to talk a little bit more about the recount. So thanks for bringing it up, Jarrell. What about his point that Jill Stein is going to get rich off of this?
She doesn't look to be a person that does things for money. I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know that much about her. I think, though, that what she's doing, she raised this money to fight this, and the money's going to be used for the recount, as far as I can tell. That's what it's used for. So I don't know that she's lining her own pockets. I'd have to do more research on that.
And speaking of the recount, this is Donald Trump's response. Yesterday he tweeted, "In addition to winning the Electoral College in a landslide, I won the popular vote if you deduct the millions of people who voted illegally. And, you know, we're not the first to say this here, but there isn't evidence that millions of people voted illegally in this election that he won the Electoral College in and is losing the popular vote in by over 2 million votes right now, but potentially much more than that. Besides the fact that he says pretty much anything he wants without consequences, what makes him say that? Like, what is it? Why does he think that there's 3 million or millions of people voted illegally?
I think that was his strategy. Had he lost, that's what he was going to say. So it just popped into his head. I who knows what he's talking about half the time. I think he's just crazy. Sorry.
You're talking about the president-elect of the United States.
I'm talking about the president-elect, and yes.
So
I'm not sure you want me to say much more.
Oh, I'd love it. So let's look at that, though. I mean, one of the things about this recount is things like that could be examined, I guess. In a recount, if tens of thousands or thousands of people voted illegally in Wisconsin, it's pretty sure that a full manual recount or whatever will happen there will expose that. And if Donald Trump is right, then we'll find out. And I think that he should be excited that he's going to be proved right if he thinks he is right. I don't know. I don't see why he's opposing the recount.
Well, I think we should have an audit and a recount in every single state. And everyone, because he's claiming, I guess, it happened in California and the states that overwhelmingly supported Hillary Clinton. You know, it's a lot of what he says is distraction. He doesn't want you to know that his staff is fighting amongst themselves over Mitt Romney and Rudy Giuliani. So he distracts with a lot of these things he says so that we're not paying attention to the discord on his own team.
813-239-9663. If you'd like to join the conversation, we have about 6 minutes left with my guest, Susan Smith, the president of the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida. You're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. Andrea in Sun City, did I pronounce your name correctly, Andrea?
To add to that, too, and that was that you would think that if he is so sure that he has won the popular vote, you'd think he would want the recount, so they can see how wonderful he is, you know?
Exactly.
Instead of being afraid of it. But, yeah, my question was, what consequence are these online petitions and really the letters, you know, that everybody's, the onslaught of letters, is it really making a difference?
I think personal letters do make a difference. I think if you change the subject line of a letter, phone calls are still the best option. One of the purposes of doing online petitions and emails is so that the organizations can collect your email address, which is not a bad thing because we're going to need to mobilize people over the next 2 to 4 years. And having all of us on the same page is not necessarily a bad thing. The group that's doing this particular letter writing campaign, the Network for Public Education, and that is the website, by the way, networkforpublic.org. I was just checking to make sure I got it all right. Is a group of I know one of the board members is from here in Florida. Her name is Colleen Wood. She's in St. Johns County. Colleen is has been working with a group called 50th No More to try to increase funding in the state of Florida for public ed. She's a great advocate. She's on the board of that organization. I know these are grassroots people that are not working to benefit themselves, they're working to benefit children. So I would urge you to join this effort and join their email list just because they're on the correct side of these issues. Also, I wanted to say in response to the Dan Gelber ad, is these people, meaning the foundation, Doug Tuthill, who's with one of Jeb's foundations, it was caught on video. I'm not even sure it was caught. It was at a conference, couple of years ago, saying that they were going to use black and brown faces in their marketing materials because they know it divides us. They're using the religion, in the case of Dan Gelber, to divide us, and we have to unite to protect what's a public institution. We don't think fire departments should be privatized or police departments or libraries or parks. So I think that our public school system is a public good that we should all support. But anyway, I got a little off topic there, Andrea, but I hope I answered your question.
Thank you for that call, Andrea. Let's move on to Fred in Clearwater. Hi, Fred.
Yeah, how y'all doing? Let me cut you real quick here on my lunch break so I'm not in any problem here, but just to make a comment, longtime member of a union. You guys don't have a union. You have a club. My wife's a teacher, has been a teacher, left teaching for 8 years. The economy took how the economy was, got back into teaching. It was hard to get back in there. She's been back in another 8 or so years. You don't have a union, you have a club. They have no say, they work. Let me tell you, and I'm speaking for my wife, but this goes for all teachers. They don't even have time for their own life. Take care of themselves, health-wise, exercise. It's constant. It's 25 hours a week minimum of work at home, unpaid. Nobody cares. I know you care, and people, but, you know, the Republicans define the unions, define the teachers, define the narrative. They did that in this election. The economy was blamed on Obama, even though the Republicans are majority governorships.
Got to wrap it up,
state
Fred.
Legislatures. It goes on and on. The union needs to get stronger. You need to get into a different, I don't know, the auto industry, the IBEW, somebody. It's
You know, I agree 1,000% with what you're saying, and I'll tell you what my brother-in-law told me back in the 70s when our union actually went on strike up in Tennessee. I was complaining about our union leadership not being strong, although I don't know that that's the issue here. I think it's the fact that this is a right-to-work state, so they have no power. But he said, get involved and take it over if you don't like what you see. So that's what I say about everything, start to finish. If you don't like it, because that's what the Republicans have done. This was very deliberate. And Dick DeVos, Betsy's husband, is on video at the Heritage Club in 2002 explaining exactly how they were going to do this takeover. So if we want the unions to be stronger, we have to join and be and participate.
Fred, excellent points. Thanks so much. And I want to thank you for joining me on Midpoint today, Susan.
Thank you. This was fun.
Yeah, thanks so much. Susan Smith is president of the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of WMNF News Midpoint Monday. Thanks to everyone who called, emailed, and texted today. My guests next week will be from the Suncoast Sierra Club. They'll talk about renewable energy and St. Petersburg's commitment to become the first Florida city to run on 100% clean energy. Tomorrow at noon, your hero, Mark Bureau, will host Midpoint Tuesday. If you'd like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts, if you missed out getting on the air today, call me at 813-238-8001, extension 114. I'll play your message next show. Thanks to James Rossi and Jeff Haynes. Stay tuned now for Flea on WMNF Tampa.